The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The U.S. announces major military aid for Ukraine. What's in the latest arms package? And how an uptick in crime is factoring into return to the office conversations.
These quality of life concerns are very much front of mind for workers. Why do I have to subject myself to these things when I can do just as much work, if not more, at home?
Plus, why cleaning fees are making short-term travel a bit messy. It's Wednesday, April 13th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The Biden administration is providing Ukraine with $800 million in additional military aid, including weapons, ammunition, security assistance, and more helicopters. President Biden announced the latest package in a statement today following a phone call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. In a video posted to Twitter today, Zelensky pleaded with world leaders to send more heavy weapons. The Biden administration is also working to significantly expand the intelligence it's providing to help Ukraine target Russian military units in the occupied regions of Donbas and Crimea. Moscow is expected to launch a major offensive in eastern Ukraine in the coming days. In New York, authorities have arrested the suspected gunman in yesterday's early morning attack in a Brooklyn subway train. New York City Police Commissioner Keyshawn Sewell says officers received a tip about Frank James's whereabouts.
We used every resource at our disposal to gather and process significant evidence that directly links Mr. James to the shooting. We were able to shrink his world quickly. There was nowhere left for him to run.
Federal prosecutors say James will be charged with a terroristic act on mass transit. He faces life in prison. Later in the show, we'll talk more about how the incident is fueling growing concerns about safety in major cities and how that's playing into return to the office plans. U.S. ethanol producers are set to get a boost from the Biden administration's plan to temporarily allow higher ethanol blends in gasoline. But there are some concerns about the ripple effect. President Biden says the move would support farmers and lower prices at the pump. The 15% blend sells for about 15 to 25 cents less a gallon than standard gasoline with 10% ethanol and 60 to 80 cents less than gas with none. The decision is seen as a win for corn growers and companies producing ethanol. But Wall Street Journal agriculture reporter Patrick Thomas says some groups fear it could inflate food prices.
If it pushes corn prices up, that could have an effect on feed, which is where the meat producers kind of come in here. And the National Chicken Council had a rather fiery statement yesterday that this is creating an artificial demand for corn, and it will likely increase the cost of corn and all food products, as well as the feed that is used for poultry and other livestock. So at the end of the day, the National Chicken Council, which is a lobbying group for chicken producers, was unhappy with the announcement, and they're one of the groups that are against it. The oil industry is also typically against these sorts of ethanol moves, but it's kind of a mixed bag on the reaction that you get. In rural America, most growers cheer this move because it means higher demand for their corn.
Biden's plan allows the 15% ethanol blend to be sold between June 1st and September 5th, a time when ethanol blends are usually limited to curb smog. First quarter earnings reports are starting to come in. After a pandemic boom, J.P. Morgan Chase saw its profit drop 42% in the first quarter and warned that rising inflation and the war in Ukraine pose threats to the economy. The nation's biggest bank has set aside $900 million in new funds in preparation for economic turmoil. CEO Jamie Dimon said the extra funds will help cushion the bank in the case of recession, a risk that he says remains remote but has grown in recent weeks. Just a year ago, J.P. Morgan freed up $5.2 billion it had reserved for potential loan losses in the early months of the pandemic. Delta Airlines is reporting a $940 million loss in first quarter earnings, but says it expects surging travel demand is helping to offset a sharp uptick in fuel prices. The company returned to profitability in March and is expecting to report a profit next quarter. Despite rising fuel and ticket costs, Delta says it's already seeing historically high bookings and is anticipating a bustling summer. Meanwhile, at Peloton, activist investor Blackwell's Capital is reiterating a push for the company to explore a sale, saying it has made little progress under new CEO Barry McCarthy. In a presentation released today, the investor said former CEO John Foley still held too much control. Peloton said it appreciates its shareholders' views and is acting in investors' best interests. Peloton was one of the companies that soared during the early months of the pandemic, but is now struggling. It's lowered its revenue forecast for several quarters in a row and has cut roughly 20% of its corporate positions. Coming up, return to the office has become a hot topic at companies. But it's not just COVID-19 concerns that are fueling debate. We'll have more on how an increase in crime is hampering coming back after the break.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
On Tuesday morning during rush hour, a routine subway commute in Brooklyn was suddenly and shockingly interrupted as smoke filled a subway car and multiple shots rang out. 10 people were injured by the gunfire. More than a dozen others were treated for smoke inhalation, falls, and panic attacks. As we reported earlier in the show, the suspect is now in custody. But the incident is reverberating far beyond New York City. From Portland, Oregon to New York, crime rates have increased in many cities during the pandemic. And that's sparking conversations about public safety, including in the workplace, as employers try to encourage workers to once again return to the office. Joining me now with more on this is Wall Street Journal reporter Peter Grant. Hi, Peter. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
So, Peter, in just the time since this attack occurred earlier this week in New York City, how has it factored into conversations about safety in regards to returning to the office?
Well, it's creating more headaches for employers who have been trying to convince employees to come back to work. Safety and health have already been big concerns for employees, but this gives them something else to think about, especially workers who commute to work using public transportation. And in some cities, a lot of employees do that.
And to that point, other major cities, not just New York, are grappling with this as well. How are areas, especially those that have seen increases in certain crimes, trying to assure workers that it is safe to take public transportation and go back to the office?
It's tough, not just because of crime, but a lot of what are called just quality of life issues. Homelessness is something else. What you have are workers who had to deal with crime and homelessness and all these other city issues pre-pandemic. But back then, there was no option about not going to the office. Everyone goes to the office to work, sort of period kaput for most people. But now, after 2 years of successfully remote working, there's now an option. And so these quality of life concerns are very much front of mind for workers. Why do I have to subject myself to these things when I can do just as much work, if not more, at home?
Right. And Peter, to that point, there are other quality of life issues that have emerged from the pandemic as well, including rates of homelessness. Can you talk about how that's factored into conversations about public safety and returning to work across the nation?
What's happened during the pandemic in a lot of cities is that homelessness has become more visible. There's a big debate in the homeless world about whether or not the numbers have actually increased, but it's certainly become more visible. And one of the reasons for that is because the CDC during the pandemic has advised cities not to do anything with homeless encampments, not to take them down, because according to the CDC, that would just add to the health risk. So that's one reason that they become more visible. And in a lot of workers' minds, for better or for worse, they associate homelessness and encampments that are highly visible with increased crime.
And this has become a point of debate in several major cities.
In New York City, Mayor Eric Adams won office last year on a platform that was very much anti-crime and pro-initiating programs that deal with homelessness on the subway. And since becoming mayor, he has taken a lot of initiatives to try to deal with both. It's been very controversial, but he's moved to clear homeless people out of the subway. And he's also pushed legislation that would give prosecutors and police more power. These same issues are beginning to play out in other cities around the country, especially where mayoral races are taking place either this year or next year. In Los Angeles, for example, a developer by the name of Rick Caruso is showing very well in the polls on a platform where he puts law and order as a high priority. Denver is going to have a mayoral race next year, and the homeless encampments in Denver that have sprouted up during the pandemic will likely be a major issue there. And also in the midterm elections, the issue of homelessness, the issue of crime, how that's impacting return to office will also become a major issue in congressional and Senate races.
Peter, it wasn't so long ago that we were talking about fear of catching or spreading COVID-19 as perhaps the primary reason workers cited in not wanting to return to the office. Has that changed? Meaning, have some of the other issues we've been talking about now taken precedence, or is it more just a combination of all of these things right now?
We've been monitoring the rate of return to office very closely throughout the pandemic. And for a long time, we saw that it was a very slow rate of return, but that was associated with a slow rate of return to other congregate activities like restaurants or malls or airports. What we've seen this year is people are going back to basketball games, they're going back to malls and restaurants, but they're not going back to the office. So it's clearly not a fear of getting COVID that's keeping people away from the office. There are a lot of other factors, including some of these quality of life issues.
How will return to office rates impact major cities, Peter?
Well, if the return to office rate stays low, it could have major impacts on cities and on small businesses in cities. Millions of commuters used to go into cities like New York and Chicago and Boston and San Francisco every day. If those commuters don't go in, they're not going to be going to restaurants and bars and going to stores. As a result, there will be less sales tax paid. As a result, office building vacancy rates will be higher. As a result, there will be fewer property taxes paid. This could have profound fiscal implications on cities. Last year, the federal government passed a $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, which helped cities get through the short-term budgetary problems that they're facing. But it's not going to have any impact on the long-term consequences if return to office rate stays low. So this could be a serious concern and could continue to have profound impact in the years to come.
Wall Street Journal reporter Peter Grant. Peter, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
And finally, the travel season is picking up, and so is the cost of vacations. For people planning to stay in a short-term rental like Airbnb and Vrbo, one line item is starting to get a lot of attention: cleaning fees. They're listed as a separate charge, and some guests say that makes it hard to comparison shop. Here's our travel reporter, Allison Poley.
So on Airbnb specifically, when you filter by price, it filters by the nightly rate, which doesn't include fees like the cleaning fee, the service fee, and taxes. So people can see a really attractive nightly rate. Maybe they want to stay somewhere and it says $100 a night. But then when they go to click through, they find that there are all these fees added, sometimes hundreds of dollars. And that's why people are feeling frustrated, because they didn't see it when they were initially searching.
Allison says hosts are also divided on cleaning fees.
Some people hire professional cleaners, and they say they pass along the cost of that cleaning service directly to the guest. And cleaning services say their costs have gone up because of inflation and also higher wages. So cleaning supplies are more expensive, workers are getting paid more, and workers can be hard to find in some vacation destinations too. Other hosts say that the cleaning fee shouldn't be broken out as a separate charge. It should just be part of the host's cost of doing business. And so they decide not to implement a separate fee for their particular listing.
And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.